after politicians who try it get caught. Take liar Hillary's buddy, Bill de Blasio, for example. He's been taking contributions for favors for years, and now he can't get through a press conference without some reporter asking about it. When they write his obituary, just under the line about how he caved to liberal pressure on sanctuary cities and gave safe harbor to illegal criminals, you'd better believe there's going to be a section on the widespread corruption he brought back to New York City politics. But Bill and Hillary Clinton are more cunning than that. They're lawyers, and they know how to tiptoe through a legal minefield. Together, they've managed to operate their foundation on the very edge of legality, offering only the briefest glimpses into the operation underneath. One of these glimpses came when Anheuser-Busch donated just over $1 million to the Clintons. According to Peter Schweitzer's explosive book, Clinton Cash, the beer giant gave the money to the Clinton Library and then watched President Clinton, who was just a few months from leaving office, drop a bill that would have regulated beer advertising that targeted minors. Interesting timing, huh? Another of Schweitzer's revelations told about Secretary Hillary Clinton's failure in 2007 to impose the strictures of a law called the Congo Relief, Security, and Democracy Prevention Act, which would have taken a Marxist dictator in Africa out of power. This wouldn't have been interesting. Secretaries of State failed to impose the law all the time. Just look at Benghazi. If it weren't for a $100 million donation to the Clinton Foundation that had come through a few months before. The donation had come from Lucas London, who ran a corrupt mining company in the Congo and needed the dictator to stay in power if he was going to keep his business running. So he slipped $100 million to the Clinton Foundation, and Hillary decided to abandon the legislation, which, by the way, she had supported just a few months before the donation went through. It's impossible to know how many other actions Clinton failed to take or how many shady deals she cut because of big donations just like that one. We can only hope that the FBI is allowed to do its job far from the political biases of its top brass and find out. Here's one more Schweitzer unearthed. In 1998, when India conducted illegal tests of nuclear weapons, shocking the world and flagrantly violating the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, Bill Clinton imposed economic sanctions. They remained in place until well into Barack Obama's first term. To combat these sanctions, the Indian government sent scores of lobbyists to the United States throughout the early 2000s. Officials in New Delhi also encouraged all influential Indians in the U.S. who would listen to affiliate strongly with the Democrat Party. As a result, millions of dollars in cash flowed into the Clinton Foundation's bank account. Suddenly, just a few months after Hillary Clinton had been named Secretary of State, those sanctions were gone. She became a vocal supporter of ending sanctions on the country and played a large part in lifting them. Bill and Hillary Clinton, two people who once had a remarkably tense relationship with India, were now being honored at dinners in that country and seeing their friends get Person of the Year awards in front of huge Indian crowds. It's amazing what a few million dollars in cash will do. And as just mentioned, Hillary still stops by India on occasion to give a speech and pick up an extra few bucks. Any place that's given up that much cash is worth another hit every once in a while, I guess. This woman does not even have the decency to commit crimes and then stay away from her accomplices like a good criminal. Instead, she throws her criminality in our faces knowing that no federal prosecutor in the country would ever make a move and indict her, especially not Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. There is a pattern with the Clintons, always walking the line. Remember the Whitewater Papers and the Rose Law Firm scandal? How about giving a pardon to Mark Rich after Denise Rich raised a fortune for the Clintons? Oh, and before I forget, I was so sad to see Denise denounce her American citizenship. Let's look at more recent manifestations of this enough is never enough playbook. Let's start with Uranium One and the Iran deals. Both deals set the stage for an unbelievable sale of 20% of the U.S. supply of uranium to Russia. Unfortunately, Iran, Russia's puppet state, will receive highly enriched uranium used to make nuclear bombs under the guise that it will use it for submarines and the production of radioactive isotopes used to treat diseases like cancer. Who else but liar Hillary Clinton could have talked the State Department into approving a deal that sent 20% of America's weapons-grade uranium to a state-sponsored company in Russia, a country, by the way, which has just announced a frighteningly revamped nuclear weapons program built using uranium? Who else would have had the insane belief that she'd never get caught? If you've watched my show, you know how angry I am about this. And if you don't watch my show, I won't hold it against you. Here's why I'm mad. Uranium is essential to make molybdenum-99, MO-99, better known as Moly-99. This isotope is used in medical nuclear imaging. Moly-99 is one of the most important weapons we have in the fight against cancer. Often, it's how doctors detect cancer, as well as diabetes and heart disease, early enough to save a patient's life. I know all about Moly-99 because for me, it's personal. In 2012, I was diagnosed with cancer. I didn't talk about it. Even now, I try to avoid talking about it. I continued to do my show every week as if nothing were wrong. Toward the end, as the chemotherapy and radiation treatments progressed, I was on air talking to my audience as usual, but I was exhausted. I didn't have my eyebrows or my eyelashes. I was wearing a wig because I was bald. Like too many who've battled cancer, my doctor's initial diagnosis was confirmed thanks to nuclear imaging. That imaging and the medical isotopes used to treat disease are made from uranium. It is uranium that saved my life and countless others. But do we have enough uranium? It seems like the Department of Energy has sipped the Obama Kool-Aid on the domestic production of Moly-99. There is no domestic production of Moly-99 as required by the American Medical Isotopes Production Act of 2012. When I spoke to the president about this, he had been advised by the swamp, presumably by DOE Obama holdovers, that there is plenty of the life-saving isotope. Notwithstanding, there are shortages reported by U.S. hospitals while Russia has positioned Iran as the world producer. On its face, the Uranium One deal stunk. Not only were we offloading one-fifth of the raw material used for life-saving medical work, we were sending weapons-grade uranium to a sworn enemy, Russia. The Clintons' involvement in Uranium One goes all the way back to 2005. It was then that Bill Clinton met a man named Frank Justra who wanted to buy uranium mines in Kazakhstan, a country that has 20% of the world's supply of uranium. Clinton, who barely knew Justra then, traveled with him to visit the president of Kazakhstan. 2 days later, Justra signed contracts that made him a partner in three of Kazakhstan's uranium mines. Soon after, Justra donated $31 million to the Clinton Foundation, A year later, Justra sold his stake in the mines to a company called Uranium One. When the deal closed, he gave the Clintons another $100 million. Later, in 2010, the chairman of Uranium One donated millions to the foundation, and Bill got $500,000 from a Russian bank for a 20-minute speech. The Clintons' influence peddling is massive, global in scale. Hillary set American foreign policy to coincide with the flow of hundreds of millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation. Bill was the fixer or bag man for the foundation. Try to find a real audit of this alleged charitable foundation. Good luck, because there isn't one. This is astounding when you think of the money the Clinton Foundation spends on expenses, salaries, and airfare for mostly Clinton comrades and former Clinton campaign members. On November 14, 2017, Newsweek published an article titled "Fox Host Told Trump to Appoint Special Counsel to Investigate Clinton at Private Meeting with President." Here's what they wrote. Fox News host Jeanine Pirro told Donald Trump he should appoint a special counsel to investigate Hillary Clinton during a private meeting in the Oval Office. Even though they had their facts wrong, no surprise there, I'm keenly aware that a president doesn't appoint a special counsel. The attorney general does. The reporter did manage to capture the essence of what happened. At the November 1 meeting between Trump and Pirro, the TV host also hit out at Attorney General Jeff Sessions for failing to investigate the former Secretary of State, including her role in the Uranium One deal, the New York Times reported. Shortly after the conversation Pirro and Trump had in the Oval Office, Sessions announced the Department of Justice would be looking to evaluate certain issues outlined by Republicans, including the Uranium One deal. The House Judiciary Committee had already requested the Justice Department appoint a special counsel to investigate these matters. Under their chairman, Bob Goodlatte, Republican Virginia, they made this request twice, on July 27, 2017, and again on September 26, 2017. They never got a response. Then I had my meeting with the president on November 1, 2017, when Jeff Sessions was due to give testimony to the committee, and suddenly he acquiesces. In other words, it took a lot of pressure for Sessions to even consider a special counsel was merited. What exactly is so difficult to understand here, Jeff? How many more fact patterns do you need to see? You certainly figured out quickly that you needed to recuse yourself from Russia when all you did was sit across the table from a guy you barely knew, but you can't figure out whether we need to look at the selling of our uranium to a foreign government? When Sessions did finally cave in and agree to investigate Uranium One, he said, "I'll have my smartest lawyers take a look." That's nice talk, but a second grader could make this case. And meanwhile, it's July 2018, and liar Hillary is still out there thumbing her nose at all of us. Now she's out raising money to fund the resistance and smugly thinking she's gotten away with everything. Chapter 7. Lying, leaking, liberal law enforcement. Of all the elements of the coordinated attack against our president, perhaps the part that infuriates me the most is the corruption that exists at the top in federal law enforcement. They did the lying, leaking, and spying necessary to cook up the dishonest investigation of non-existent collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. In addition to amounting to a coup attempt against the president, their actions represent a betrayal of all the men and women who dedicate their lives to fighting crime. Clean house at the FBI. The FBI needs a complete overhaul, a complete cleansing. Cut off its head. When a company in the private sector stops serving its shareholders or is tainted by politics, the board of directors fires the CEO. Sometimes the shareholders fire the board of directors and the CEO. That's what needs to happen at this government agency, whose leadership has become so corrupt and politicized that it has rendered the agency completely incapable of performing its core functions. Gone are Director James Comey, Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, General Counsel James Baker, FBI Chief of Staff James Rybicki, Assistant Director of Public Affairs Michael Cortan, and Lisa Page, FBI attorney and love interest of Peter Strzok, who has been demoted. The upper echelon of the FBI has become ground zero for liars, leakers, and liberals. Perhaps at no time and place in U.S. history has this much lying and leaking occurred in so short a time, all for one nefarious purpose: to whitewash Hillary Clinton, nullify the election of Donald Trump, and see that nothing the voters elected Trump to do ever gets done. This is the deep state and the heart of the swamp, and it's a heart of darkness. FBI agents, some of whom are on the Mueller's special counsel team, chase Russians to create a non-existent Trump-Russia collusion narrative and work the fake Hillary email investigation, or should I say matter, while ignoring credible tips loaded with probable cause. As Peter Strzok and Lisa Page carry on their affair, thinking they're going to change the course of history, Andrew McCabe, handling both the Clinton matter and the Trump case, collects hundreds of thousands of dollars from a Clinton political ally for his wife Jill's campaign. Meanwhile, real justice is thwarted. The FBI made several major errors, many on James Comey's watch. Jim, were you too busy trying to concoct a Russia collusion case? You screwed up the Boston Marathon bombers case. Four people died and many others lost limbs or eyesight, thanks to your BS excuse that the threat wasn't specific enough. The Fort Hood massacre, the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, the San Bernardino massacre, and the attacks of 9/11 are all among spectacular FBI failures. You were involved in most of them, but you're so territorial, so selfish, so politicized, so focused on headlines, so full of yourself, that you refuse to even share information with other agencies. It's not as though the Parkland, Florida school shooting was the first time the FBI failed to prevent a mass shooting by an unstable person it had already investigated. It investigated Pulse nightclub shooter Omar Mateen prior to his mass shooting with similar results. And just as in Nicholas Cruz's case, the FBI had multiple warnings, Mateen was dangerous and likely to harm others. For heaven's sake, even his mosque had told the FBI he was dangerous. All of this seemed to have slipped liar Jim Comey's mind when he was questioned about the FBI's previous investigations of Omar Mateen going back years before the shooting. All we got from Comey was the usual set of excuses for why an obvious threat was ignored while the agency was busy rummaging around for Russians. The New York Times says that even pervert Dr. Larry Nassar was on Comey's radar almost 3 years ago. And what did Comey do? Nothing. Whom did he notify? No one. As a result, an estimated 40 more young women were victimized by Nassar. And when confronted with this atrocity and blatant disregard for our children, the FBI public relations team said, "The safety and well-being of our youth is a top priority." Of course, there are good men and women in the FBI. I have worked with a lot of them. But they're marginalized. They're not advanced. The power is in the click at the top. It was FBI leadership that handled the Hillary matter, not the field offices. This FBI has been stained and politicized by Comey. It's time to stop this charade. It's time to return the FBI to its original mission. In March 2018, FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe turned over notes he had kept on President Trump to Robert Mueller just hours after he was officially fired from the FBI. He then claimed victim status, claiming his downfall was the result of a series of attacks designed to undermine his credibility and reputation. Andy, I don't know how to break this to you, but the only reason you're even in the news is because you're a liar. And when you lie under oath, or even to the FBI when not under oath, you've committed a crime, whether you're convicted or not. Consider this. General Michael Flynn, who put his life on the line for all of us when he served in the military, admitted to lying to the FBI about something that wasn't even criminal. And now he's a convicted felon. Martha Stewart lied to the FBI, and now she is a convicted felon who spent time in prison. McCabe lied not only to the FBI, but to the Inspector General under oath, even after being given an opportunity to take the lie back. Flynn and Stewart are crooks and McCabe isn't. The Wall Street Journal called McCabe the new deep throat. Just like the original Mark Felt, McCabe abused his power, leaked information about an ongoing investigation for his benefit, and lied about it. Lest we forget, Felt was convicted on felony charges for his behavior, although he was pardoned by President Reagan in 1981. As far as I'm concerned, McCabe's actions warrant prosecution far more than Felt's did. McCabe is out of a job because the FBI's Office of Professional Responsibility said after the Inspector General's investigation that McCabe had made unauthorized disclosures to the news media and that he had lacked candor. Translation, he lied. He lied about the investigations into the Clinton Foundation and leaked information to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, neither of which he was authorized to do. Cardinal Comey. We shouldn't be surprised. McCabe's boss, Jim Comey, also leaked information, seeking to get it into the New York Times because he didn't have the guts to stand up and say what he wanted to say himself. Comey and McCabe are gold members of the LLL Club. They're liars and leakers. They both lied and leaked in direct violation of federal laws. And McCabe has the audacity to cry about being targeted? I have a message for you. Andy, you're not that important. No one's looking to bring you down personally, but your wife gets almost $700,000 from the Clinton cash machine, and you handle the Clinton email investigation? A 5-year-old could see the conflict of interest. We entrusted you with the power of the greatest law enforcement agency in the nation, and you not only used it to your own advantage, you used it to your political and financial advantage. Every FBI employee knows that lying to the FBI results in automatic dismissal. That's only if you're a privileged government employee. Regular folks who lie to the FBI go to jail. But McCabe wants us to believe his termination is part of an effort to undermine the special counsel's Russia investigation. He's lucky he's not in jail. The only Russia investigation that should be going on at this point is one looking into Hillary and that whole gang for the shady sale of our uranium to Russia. It's going to get worse for McCabe when his sidekick, Peter Strzok, and Strzok's girlfriend are called on the carpet for their undertaking to create an insurance policy to take down Trump. If Comey and McCabe our gold members, Strzok is definitely executive platinum. He's a liar, leaker, and liberal. He hit the traitor's trifecta. Platinum cuffs for him. Unless, of course, he decides to rat on his comrades. McCabe also lied about his relationship with top counterintelligence agent Strzok, who worked for him while McCabe, Strzok, Comey, and others tried to affect the presidential election and later the presidency of Donald Trump, by starting the Trump-Russia inquiry. They opened that investigation even though the only person who had colluded with the Russians was Hillary. There were 3 pending federal inquiries into McCabe's actions while he was still at the FBI. He was removed from his post only after the new FBI director saw evidence regarding his misdeeds. While McCabe threatened Jim Comey, saying he would torch the FBI if forced out of his job, Comey wrote a conciliatory tweet saying Special Agent Andrew McCabe stood tall over the last 8 months when small people were trying to tear down an institution we all depend on. He served with distinction for 2 decades. I wish Andy well. I also wish continued strength for the rest of the FBI. America needs you. Comey is clearly hoping that McCabe won't testify against him. Who is going to rat on whom? If this were the movie The Godfather, Cardinal Comey would be the capo di tutti, Andrew McCabe the enforcer, Lisa Page both consigliere and the gommade, and Peter Strzok the button man. And it looks as though Strzok, who may have signed the warrant application to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA Court, was a close friend of Judge Rudolph Contreras, who signed the warrant. Since Comey's book came out, the intrigue has deepened. McCabe says Comey gave him permission to leak information. Comey, in a rare moment of clear recollection, claims he didn't. McCabe insists Comey lied to Congress. McCabe said he not only had authority to share information with the media about Hillary, but he did so with Comey's knowledge. His former co-workers at the FBI called James Comey Cardinal Comey behind his back. It wasn't meant as a compliment. They were referring to the exasperating sanctimony with which he cultivates his false image as an incorruptible, morally superior servant of the people. In one way, it's fitting. That's because he may be more revered today by liberals than the Pope by Roman Catholics. But it wasn't so long ago that those same liberals considered him the devil incarnate for supposedly stealing Hillary Clinton's certain victory in the 2016 election. That was before they bought into an even less realistic theory that the Russians had somehow turned the election for Trump simply by disseminating nasty and often true stories about crooked Hillary. Now, Comey is selling a book about how he and others of his ilk within the agency are patriotic heroes defending the republic against the supposedly authoritarian and illegitimate President Donald J. Trump. As I said recently on my show, don't you love it when arrogant egomaniacs are hoisted by their own petard? FBI Director James Comey and Deputy Director Andrew McCabe now know the pain of that petard. The Department of Justice is investigating Andrew McCabe after an Obama-appointed IG made a criminal referral against him, and pompous Cardinal Comey is now being investigated for leaking classified information. When Comey's memos were released, they were supposed to lay out the real reason for his firing, that Donald Trump was colluding with Russians and looking to obstruct justice. Unfortunately for Comey, the Democrats and the mainstream media, they prove just the opposite. Because he didn't trust the president, Comey made notes of his presidential meetings. The memos were written contemporaneously with the meetings, one within 5 minutes of the meeting. Contemporaneous notes carry great legal weight because they are made almost immediately after the event, when the memory is fresh. But unfortunately for Jim Comey, they don't support his narrative. In fact, they prove 3 things. 1, the president encouraged the FBI to investigate the issue of collusion between anyone on the Trump campaign and Russia. 2, he encouraged the FBI to investigate the Steele dossier. 3, the president wanted to make sure his administration was free of leakers. Here's the rub. The meeting was a setup to allow CNN to go forward with a negative story about the president and to create the illusion of Russia collusion. Comey himself admitted to the president that CNN wanted to go forward with the dossier story because some leaker gave it to them. But there needed to be a news hook. The meeting Comey set up to inform the president about the dossier was the hook. 4 days later, CNN ran the story Comey told the president about the dossier. Comey's hook worked. But it gets even better. James Clapper, the man Jim Comey said he admires most in government, whom we already know is a liar based on his, "We don't spy on Americans, well, not wittingly at least," told Comey to meet with the president to speak about the dossier. Comey is dumb enough to admit this. "I then executed the session exactly as I had planned. I said the Russians allegedly had tapes involving him and prostitutes in Moscow so they could lend credence to a hyped-up Russia collusion investigation." Trump, however, interjected, saying there were never prostitutes. Comey lied and said the FBI was keeping a close hold on the dossier so that there would be no excuse to expose the story. So, to make it simple, Clapper told Comey to meet with the president to alert him about the prostitutes, which was a pretext to create a news hook for CNN to leak the story. Once Comey is fired, he decides he will leak information through a friend to the New York Times. Now the Department of Justice is investigating that leak of classified information. "Jim, you're the head of the FBI. You told the president he wasn't under investigation. You get fired, and now you need to put things in the public square to get a special counsel to put him under investigation? Why would you need to do that? Your first memo was actually sent to the FBI, to your deputy director, Andrew McCabe, your chief of staff, James Rybicki, and your general counsel and closest advisor, James Baker, and who knows who else, since there clearly wasn't anything criminal evidenced in the memo. What's with the hogwash that you need to get the information into the public square to get a special counsel appointed?" Comey says the release of his memo to his liberal Columbia University professor friend, now lawyer Daniel Richmond, was done with the intent to get it to the New York Times and generate a special counsel. He denies he leaked it, saying it was not a leak. Both Fox News channels, Brett Baer, and CNN's Anderson Cooper were incredulous at his response. He responded by saying it was his personal diary, as if anyone at the FBI routinely, if ever, sends his or her diary to the deputy director of the FBI, his chief of staff, and legal counsel. Comey relies upon Clintonian language to evade legal jeopardy and defend sharing a classified memo. He says he was sharing an unclassified document to get out to the media. The memo says secret on its face, which means it's classified. That leads to the next question. Why was Daniel Richmond given a special government employee status, and why isn't he being questioned about his role in leaking information? In order to obtain special government employee status, he would have been required to have training on federal records and federal information. He knew it was illegal to leak federal records and had an obligation to report Comey for leaking. Although Comey admits leaking to Richmond a memo that doesn't implicate the president of anything, anyone would have to ask if he did it before. Did Comey use Richmond on other occasions to leak information meant to gin up a fraudulent, illegal, immoral Russia investigation? After all, Comey was clearly a Clinton political ally. He absolved her of criminal liability in the email scandal. What few know is that Comey investigated the Clinton Foundation and Hillary in particular, for the failure to file from 1999 to 2004 annual legally required audits. The case abruptly ended. The players, U.S. Attorney James Comey, FBI Chief Robert Mueller, and the one who had final tax fraud prosecution oversight, Rod Rosenstein. The swamp hard at work. Jim, you are a liar and a leaker. You are pompous, egotistical, condescending, and you violated the laws that you swore to uphold because you want to make news, because you want to write a book, because you want to be a hero, and because you don't think the rules apply to you. And because you are like your friend McCabe, you do it for personal gain. Newsflash, once you took those memos out of the building to leak to the New York Times, you committed a crime. You had no right to do that. They were federal records. They were not personal notes. They were not memos to self. They were memos to other FBI agents. If Donald Trump needed investigating, why didn't you investigate him when you were the highest-ranking law enforcement official in the country? Why? The investigation was secondary. It was phony. You needed to make yourself the protagonist. Now we know that but for those memos and your illegal leak to the New York Times, Robert Mueller wouldn't be tearing at the fabric of this country. Isn't it a bittersweet irony, Jim, that both you and McCabe are being looked at for the same thing Hillary did? You're in the same boat as she. You said she didn't intend to have classified information on her server. But you, Jim, made it clear you intended to release those memos so that you could get even with the president. You had the intent you say was missing in Hillary's case. Jim, the FBI is not proud of you. You're a former FBI director out there discussing matters presently under investigation by the special counsel. Where do you come off publishing a book about issues under investigation? You even admitted what you leaked was secret and therefore classified. But you protest that you don't do sneaky things, Cardinal. You don't leak. You don't do weasel moves. Jim, are you schizo? On the one hand, you lie to the president that you don't leak, but the whole point of the memo and the meeting with the president was to leak it. And now on your book tour, you say, it's true, I'm a leaker. And Jim, you're a political operative too. You wanted Hillary Clinton to be president. You even skirted the law to let her get away with it. And you played along with Loretta Lynch so she could help. But Jim, you must keep your facts straight. During your book tour, the same day you said Hillary would be a better president, you demurred and said it's too hard to go back in time and answer that question. Jim, do your answers depend on the time of day or who's interviewing you? Jim, it isn't working. You're trying to look like an objective individual until you again admit you're not. So, you're not sneaky. You're not a leaker. She'd be a better president. Jim, be very careful. You knew from the get-go you would cut Hillary loose, and you knew from your time in the Obama administration you would go after Donald Trump. You deceived the American people. As a result, you're under investigation for leaking classified information, theft of government property, obstruction of justice, and a clear abuse of power. If I were a betting woman, I'd lay odds your friend Clapper is another one soon to be under investigation. The bittersweet irony for all Americans is we will be able to watch you fight each other. Andrew McCabe, who says you told him repeatedly that it was okay to leak to the Wall Street Journal, and Loretta Lynch, whom you accused of pressuring you not to call Hillary's case an investigation. So now, folks, as the whole idea of collusion with Russia by the Donald Trump campaign fades into obscurity, we now see the deep state doing what it does best, state actors protecting each other and like-minded members of the system. But if there's any justice and the DOJ is dutifully run, you'll all be made accountable. It's no accident everyone Comey sent his original memo to has either left or been reassigned away from Mueller's witch hunt. That should raise questions for anyone with an open mind. Here's a question that may not have occurred to you. Why haven't we heard anything from or about Assistant Director of the FBI Counterintelligence Division Bill Priestap? Priestap was Peter Strzok's boss while this whole anti-Trump conspiracy was being perpetrated. Certainly, we would expect to hear his name mentioned when everyone else on the seventh floor of the J. Edgar Hoover building above and below him is making daily news. I suspect we haven't heard about Priestap because he's cooperating, either with Mueller's investigation or investigations into the FBI's leadership. I don't have any inside information on this, but my experience as a prosecutor tells me this is the most likely explanation for Priestap's silence. We'll have to wait and see. Or is it J. Edgar Comey? Because his mission was to change the course of American presidential history, Jim Comey has done more damage to the FBI as an institution than J. Edgar Hoover. The only difference between him and J. Edgar is that we know he wore dresses. The truth is, Comey was the chief architect in tainting and politicizing the FBI. When I say partisan hacks, I don't necessarily mean Democrats or Republicans. But that doesn't really matter, because the 2016 election wasn't about Republicans versus Democrats. It was about the establishment versus the people. I am the eternal optimist. There have been rough patches in the FBI's history, but the rank and file men and women of the FBI have done wonders over the years to restore the agency's reputation. Starting with its very first director, J. Edgar Hoover, there was corruption at the top. While Hoover is credited with taking down high-profile bank robbers during the 1930s, developing counter-espionage work during World War II, and modernizing law enforcement technique in some areas, he's also notorious for abusing the power vested in him to wage personal and political vendettas. They started during Hoover's first years with the FBI's predecessor, the Bureau of Investigation. According to Boston University professor Alston Purvis, son of the legendary special agent Melvin Purvis, who brought down the notorious criminals John Dillinger and Pretty Boy Floyd, Hoover persecuted his father relentlessly. The younger Purvis wrote in his book The Vendetta, Special Agent Melvin Purvis, John Dillinger, and Hoover's FBI in the Age of Gangsters, that Hoover blocked him, Melvin Purvis, from getting jobs, ordered agents to dig up dirt on him, invented stories that impugned his character, and deleted him from official FBI histories. And why? Because Purvis was receiving too much of the credit for stopping Dillinger and Floyd, credit Hoover believed should be bestowed solely upon himself. Forget that it was Purvis and his men who had risked their lives in two spectacular gunfights with the gangsters, eventually killing them both, while Hoover sat on his ego in a cozy office in Washington. Hoover pioneered the practice of wiretapping politicians and other political opponents on behalf of the presidents he served under. Meanwhile, he repeatedly denied the existence of the mafia. Rather than doing the hard work of investigating it, he preferred the relatively easier glory of designating lone bandits, public enemy number one, and taking the credit when real law enforcement officers like Purvis hunted them down. So the mafia ran wild, even establishing a quasi-corporate organization called Murder, Inc., while Hoover was busy abusing his power for personal and political ends. The good people within the FBI worked for decades to reform the agency's reputation after Hoover finally abdicated his dark throne and this world. Until Cardinal Comey, the Bureau had, for the most part, convinced the public that it was an apolitical law enforcement agency. Unfortunately, as with the IRS and EPA, President Barack Obama sought to politicize the FBI. He couldn't have picked a better man for the job than James Comey. Comey eventually surrounded himself with like-minded individuals, Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok, both of whom figure significantly in the conspiracy to bring down the Trump presidency. Letting Crooked Hillary off the hook. While the upper echelon of the FBI focused on politics, it ignored the Clinton Foundation, Uranium One, and its own protocols in the Hillary email investigation. Let me tell you the whole story on the crooked Uranium One deal. The fake news media have done everything they can to spin and downplay this egregious betrayal of U.S. national security, but there are several facts not disputed by anyone. One, in 2010, the Russian government-owned ARMZ, A-R-M-Z, Uranium Holding Company, acquired a 51% stake in Uranium One, a Canadian uranium mining company with significant operations in the United States. The acquisition gave the Russian government control of a company with rights to mine up to 20% of all U.S. uranium deposits. It would eventually buy out the remaining shares and assume complete ownership of the company in 2013. Two, for ARMZ to acquire that stake in Uranium One, it needed approval from the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, CFIUS. That committee is chaired by the Secretary of the Treasury and includes representatives of several government agencies, including the Departments of Commerce, Energy, and State. Secretary of State Clinton's representative approved the deal, as did several other agency representatives of the Obama administration. Three, while the Russian government was acquiring Uranium One, which it did in three separate transactions between 2009 and 2013, Uranium One's chairman made four separate donations to the Clinton Foundation, totaling $2.35 million. Secretary Clinton did not disclose those donations to the Obama White House, breaking a previous agreement to do so based on the obvious potential conflict of interest the foundation represented for a sitting Secretary of State. And, as if the millions funneled to the Clintons by Uranium One's chairman weren't enough, a Russian investment bank linked to the Kremlin and promoting Uranium One stock paid Bill Clinton $500,000 for a single speech in Moscow right after ARMZ announced it would acquire a controlling interest in Uranium One. None of those facts is in dispute. Now, the liberal media can make all the excuses for Hillary they want to. They say there is no direct proof of a quid pro quo, as if a scam artist with Hillary's decades of experience would allow herself to be video recorded taking the money from Uranium One's chairman and, with a wink and a nudge, telling him to let the Russians know they wouldn't get any resistance from her. Another excuse offered by the mainstream media is that several other federal agencies also approved the sale. I thought whataboutism was a cardinal sin. Besides, the State Department is the big dog in this decision, and seven of the CFIUS members are connected to the Clinton Foundation. Put those puppies under oath and watch them squirm. They want to put the president under oath, but not Hillary Clinton. The deep state wants to checkmate the president. Obama and the Clintons sold our uranium and with it the security of our nation. How did it happen? In 2008, the Russians were frantic. They were desperate to buy uranium, the key ingredient to making nuclear weapons. The Obama administration was more than willing to accommodate. In fact, the whole upper tier of the Obama administration, those paragons of globalist virtue, approved the deal. As far back as 2009, the FBI and the DOJ had an active large-scale criminal investigation into Russia and Kremlin-connected individuals who were conspiring to access America's uranium. The plan included bribery, money laundering, and kickback schemes. In all, the Clinton Foundation received approximately $145 million, yet it failed to disclose major contributions from entities involved in this Uranium One deal. Why is this important? Folks, context is everything. The backdrop of the sale of 20% of America's uranium to the Russians was Putin's ongoing racketeering enterprise that the Obama inner circle knew about and the FBI and DOJ were monitoring and investigating. And yet, they subsequently allowed the transfer to Russia. You know the players. Follow the names. The DOJ, headed by Eric Holder, was in charge not only of this investigation, but also on the committee that approved the sale. The case was handled by Rod Rosenstein. You know him. He's the same man who told Jeff Sessions to recuse himself and get out of the way of the Russia investigation so Rosenstein could appoint Bob Mueller to try to connect Trump to Russia. If that isn't the irony of all ironies. Who was the head of the FBI at the time? It was Bob Mueller, the man now appointed special counsel to connect Donald Trump to Russia. How about the FBI agent handling the case? It was none other than Andrew McCabe, who was handling the Clinton email investigation. You may remember his wife got $675,000 from Clinton pal Terry McAuliffe, who is also connected to the Clinton Foundation. McCabe's wife lost, but under Virginia law, she could keep whatever cash was left from that generous contribution. At the time of the approval of the transfer, Republicans in Congress vociferously objected based on national security. They worried because they knew Russia helped Iran build its nuclear reactor and the takeover of U.S. nuclear resources by a Russian government-owned agency would be against our national security interests. At the time the Obama administration green-lighted the deal, Republicans in Congress objected, and they didn't even know about the criminality and the money laundering. The fact that other appointees of the Obama administration joined Crooked Hillary in selling us out to the Russians is not a very strong defense. Now let me give you the clincher. The FBI knew there was something rotten going on during the whole time the Russians were acquiring Uranium One. It knew the Russians were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and money laundering to expand Vladimir Putin's uranium holdings in the United States. They knew that before the Obama administration approved the second Uranium One deal in 2010. The FBI's covert informer, who we now know was William Campbell, was inside the Russian nuclear industry. Campbell provided direct evidence to three congressional committees that Moscow had compromised a U.S. trucking firm with bribes and kickbacks. The Russian government also expected the lobbying firm APCO, A-P-C-O, to apply a portion of its $3 million annual fee to support the Clinton Global Initiative, whose incorporation was approved by Lois Lerner. The purpose was to have the Obama administration make favorable decisions for Russia on Uranium One and the U.S.-Russia Civilian Nuclear Cooperation Agreement. More importantly, the FBI had firsthand evidence, including an eyewitness account and documents to back it up, that Russian nuclear officials had directed millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation while Hillary was still Secretary of State and before her State Department approved the Uranium One deal. You heard that right. It had hard evidence of real collusion with the Russians by Hillary Clinton. Yet, Justice Department officials sat on the information and allowed the Obama administration to approve the purchase anyway. And Hillary was right in the middle of it. So what happened to the criminal case? The criminal case was plea bargained to a lesser crime on a Labor Day weekend. The sentence, a slap on the wrist, meted out at Christmas time with none of the bells and whistles that normally accompany an international racketeering case. The informant who brought the case to the FBI's attention? Initially, he was gagged by Eric Holder and then Loretta Lynch due to a non-disclosure agreement where the sanction was a criminal penalty. I have never heard of such a thing. As a result of public outcry, the informant was released from the non-disclosure agreement. As Secretary of State, Clinton sat on that Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States, CFIUS. It was CFIUS that okayed the sale of the uranium, and the Obama administration was providing cover from the start. I spoke with Victoria Tensing, the former prosecutor, an experienced and respected criminal defense attorney, who along with her husband, Joe DeGeneva, knows the Washington criminal circuit as well as anyone about the case. She reminded me what an FBI informant named Doug Campbell had to say about the deal. Doug Campbell provided the United States government crucial information about Russia's plan to control our uranium supply and about the massive corruption within that country's nuclear industry. Campbell began his reporting well over a year before the CFIUS decision to sell Uranium One to those corrupt Russian companies. He also heard continuous bragging by the Russians that the fix was in for the sale because of their connections to the Clintons. When he brought a civil suit to regain the $500,000 he paid the Russians from his own funds under the direction of the FBI, the Obama Justice Department threatened him with prosecution unless he dismissed the case. The Obama administration was so adamant that the American public not find out about this that it threatened Campbell for attempting to reveal the information he had gathered during the 2016 election, citing the confidentiality agreement he had signed with the government. The Senate obtained permission from the Trump Justice Department to hear Campbell's story and submitted a written statement in February confirming the facts as I've related them just now. Still, even in the face of Campbell's eyewitness testimony, the lying liberal Democrats have the audacity to defend Crooked Hillary, saying Campbell didn't provide evidence of a quid pro quo. But even if you somehow conclude that there isn't enough evidence to prosecute Clinton for corruption in this case, despite the glaring evidence of her guilt, you really have